Kyle Woodley from the Red Line Report joins us once again. Kyle, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jason. We're getting close to draft time, so I'm getting pretty popular this time of year.
Oh, I would think so. Everyone's excited. Interesting, and I'm not surprised by it at all when Jack Eichel, all the stories coming out of the combine, he says, hey, I'm going to be just as good, if not better, than Connor McDavid. You have to have confidence in yourself. I'm not sure I even necessarily claim it to be arrogance. I know physically, he's a little bit older. His season ended a little bit earlier. He was killing it at the combine. How close is Jack Eichel and Connor McDavid in your eyes when it comes to evaluations?
It's close, but I just give McDavid the edge because one of the really key things that you look for is hockey sense, and there's just nobody in the last 20 years who has more hockey sense than McDavid does. He's so far off the charts there that he just plays the game sitting back like a chess grandmaster and seeing moves four and five moves down the road that nobody else can even visualize. So, for me, that's the big difference. That and McDavid's skating is just terrific. I mean, he accelerates so well on his edges coming out of his breaks that it's really unusual to see guys get quicker coming out of their breaks. So, but there's nothing wrong with the package of tools that Eichel brings to the game. I've said this before, and in I would guess probably 8 out of any 10-year period, he'd be number one overall. He's going to be probably the best number two overall pick since Evgeny Malkin was picked in 2004, right behind Ovechkin.
Yeah, no argument there. Now, so you think McDavid's hockey sense is at a higher level than Crosby's was at their same age?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's kind of splitting hairs, but I would say that McDavid is even a little bit ahead there. Nobody ranks up there with a Gretzky and maybe a Lemieux, but he's in that kind of company just in terms of pure hockey sense.
Well, that's some pretty good company. Oilers fans getting more excited when you mention that. I know you have your top 10 forwards. McDavid and Eichel are number one, of course. You have Marner, then Strome, then Mikko and Antonin, Dennis Gurianov, Matt Barzal, Pavel Zacha, Lawson Krause, and Nick Merkley as your top 10. I do want to discuss, Matt Barzal, a lot of scouts I've talked to felt like if he hadn't been injured, he might be right in the conversation with Marner and Strome. What do you think?
I think that's true. Before the season started, and we were all, very much aware of Barzal, and Hockey Canada loves him. He was actually on Canada's under-18 team, last April in Finland as an underager, one of the few players who ever makes that season-ending under-18 team as an underager. And his hockey sense, his stick handling ability, the way he weaves through traffic, it's so hard to get a clean hit on him. He's so elusive. And his vision and creativity on the ice, I think it's entirely possible that if he hadn't lost close to 2.5 months, it was more than 2 months that he actually lost, and right in the middle of the season, and then it takes you a little bit of while to get back into full game shape. I think if he hadn't had that season interrupted the way he did, we could be talking about him as a top five guy, and he certainly was a top five guy coming into the season.
I'm not sure there's a player that's more debated as to where he'll go in the first round than Lawson Krause. He's just so big and strong already, so physically mature. Some wonder about, if he's a top 10 pick, you got to have top 10, offensive potential. You have him ranked number 9 amongst forwards in the top 10. What do you like about him, and is there any concern, about his lack of offense thus far at the junior level?
I would say that, the concern for me is that he wasn't putting up a whole lot of points until, Sam Bennett came back and that seemed to spark him offensively. He's got a heavy shot, but he doesn't really pinpoint it with accuracy to the corners. I think that's a little bit of a concern. He's 13th overall on our list at Red Line Report. As you said, 9th on our list of forwards. I've seen plenty of people have him in the top 5 or 7, but in a year like last year, which wasn't that strong a year, if you had him in the picks 5 through 7 range, it wouldn't have been unusual. But I just think there's so many outstanding players in this year's draft. There's so much marquee talent at the top end, and it's so deep in the first round. He's just just a touch outside of our top 10. And because of the reason you mentioned, I think, you know, his offensive instincts are not as advanced as the others who are in our top 10.
Kyle Woodleaf joins us. Kyle, two players I just don't get to see a lot because of you know, where they're playing. The big wingers, Mikko Rantanen, and of course the Russian sharpshooter, Denis Granov. I guess start with Rantanen. What do you like about him? Can you give us a comparison, not who he's going to be like, but who his game is similar to?
Well, I mean, with Rantanen, one of the big things is, A, he's 6'4", 210 pounds, so he's a true horse out there. He uses his size to bull his way to the net. He's got a really good shot. He dominates below the circles. And, of course, there's the fact that, you know, he was playing all season long against men in the Finnish Elite League. He played for kind of a poor team, and Turku sold off all their assets at the trade deadline in late December, early January. So from January on, he was getting almost 20 minutes of ice time a night against men. And his scoring picked up dramatically. I mean, he was scoring on a regular basis in a really good Finnish league. You know, I think if you try to equate that to, you know, what if he had come over here and played in the CHL in his draft year, I think he'd have been a very dominant player at the CHL level. You know, we have him at 7th overall on our list in Redline Report, and the kind of guy that I would maybe liken him to is kind of a Max Pacioretty. You know, he's a goal scorer with size. You know, he's not necessarily a creative setup man, but that's not what you're looking for typically from him. I mean, he's going to create some offense for his line mates just because of the fact that he's going to create a lot of extra space and room down low for them. He's going to clear things out for other people to work down low. And he's going to drive the net hard and create a lot of rebounds. So, you know, he's going to create offense that way. But he's primarily a goal scorer with great size and likes to use his physicality.
And the Russian sniper, who I think you have him maybe as the best pure scorer in the draft?
Yeah, he's clearly got the best shot in the draft. I mean, okay. The puck just explodes off Gurianov's stick. You know, he just handcuffs even top-notch goaltenders. You know, he's just got so much power in his game. He's also got good size, 6'2", over 190 pounds. He's got a great first step burst. He's got a really good top end gear. He plays with a lot of passion. So, you know, there's not a whole lot that I don't like about this kid's game. He's going to be a top notch goal scorer.
When you talk to organizations, Kyle, is the KHL and the quote Russian factor, quote, is that a concern?
It's still alive, but I'd say it's less of a concern than it was, you know, say 5 years ago. You know, first of all, how many really top-notch Russian players have not ultimately come over? I mean,
yeah.
If you looked at, I look back at the 2010 draft, and at Redline Report, we had Tarasenko ranked 4th overall. I think he went 16th to St. Louis, and that was because of the Russian factor. But, you know, what I say is, okay, they had to wait 2 years for him to come over in St. Louis. There's not too many players that you would have drafted in the top 10 that year that wouldn't have taken 2 more years at junior before they graduated to the NHL anyway. So same thing in that same draft, Kuznetsov. He was a top 10 talent, went 26th overall to Washington. They waited 3 years to bring him over. You know, still, there's not a lot of under 21-year-olds who play in the NHL, and he made it to the NHL at age 21, so they waited 3 years for him. You know, I think if you're going to get that type of level of talent, you know, having to wait 2 or 3 years is not that much of a penalty.
Would agree with you wholeheartedly. The one, I guess, give me your sleeper pick.
I'd say there's a couple of sleepers, particularly among the forwards, because it's such a deep crop. Sleepers meaning maybe guys who slip into the first round that people aren't really aware of. One of those for me is Zach Senishin, who played for Sault Ste. Marie, a very deep team this year in the OHL. They broke him in slowly in the first half of the season. He was only playing on the third line and not seeing any power play time on a very deep squad. But he's a big horse who can really skate, and he forced his way up their depth chart in the second half of the season and was, you know, instrumental in their deep playoff run. You know, he's 6'2", almost 200 pounds with great skating ability, and he's a guy who's just going to continue to get better and better and better, and his development curve is straight on the upswing. So, you know, he's a guy I think is a real sleeper. And then, you know, one other kid that I would mention is a big 6'4" Russian winger named Nikolai Chabikin. You know, again, 6'4", and he can skate like the wind. He just flies out there, and he wants to impact the game on every shift. So those are two guys who are sleepers. Again, with Chabikin, I don't expect him to crack the first round because of the Russian factor, but it really wouldn't surprise me to see Zach Senyshyn from Sault Ste. Marie crack that bottom end of the first round.
Just because, you know, the size and the skill, and you mentioned when you've got a deep lineup, people will look at his stats and might say, well, he's not that good. But if he's on another team, he's likely getting top six, maybe top 3 minutes.
That's exactly right. I mean, Senyshyn, if he had been playing on a power play on that really good Sault Ste. Marie team that filled the net, you know, they had six really good forwards in their top six. So it's not really a knock against Senyshyn that he didn't, you know, crack their top six right off the bat. But if he had been playing power play and top six ice time with that team all year, you know, his stats weren't bad. I think he had somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 48, 50 points, somewhere around there. But, you know, I could easily have seen him up around 65, 70 points.
Let's switch to the defense. There seems to be no debate on who the top three ranked defensemen are. There's a little bit of debate in which order, in Werenski and of course Noah Hanifin, and then of course the Russian in Brandon, who to me Provorov, who's outstanding. Where do you rank them 1, 2, 3, and how big of a gap, if any, is there for you?
I actually don't have them 1, 2, 3. I've
really?
Got Hanifin as number one and Provorov as clearly number two. But I've got Jeremy Roy just one spot ahead of Zach Werenski in Redline Report's final rankings. You know, we've got Jeremy Roy at 11 and Zach Werenski at 12. I'm sure that more than 50% of NHL teams have Werenski ranked ahead of Roy because, again, kind of like Matthew Barzal, Roy had an injury-plagued season. He actually played through a broken wrist and still, you know, missed about 25 games of the season. But this kid is a guy whose hockey sense and puck-moving ability is just off the charts. You know, he's a guy who would have been up around 75, 80 points in the Quebec League this year if he hadn't missed so much time. I just think he's the best power play quarterback of any defenseman in the draft. And, you know, the special teams are so important at the NHL level these days. You know, so much of the offense is generated on the power play that I think that really emphasizes being a great power play quarterback is an extra added bonus when you get top defensemen there. So I think, you know, those four are clearly the top four, but I would put Roy in there with those three. And in the order that I have them, it would be Hanifin, Provorov, Roy, and Werenski.
Now, I know you guys have the your cover book out for the Redline Report. We have a lot of texters wanting, will they have an online one, a digital one, where people can access and buy soon?
Yeah, we have a PDF version that if people want to buy our draft guide, you know, they can you know, they can order off of our website at www.redlinereport.com, or they can call us directly. Phone number here is 518-523-4289, and we can send them out PDF files immediately.
Okay, awesome. Looking overall at this draft, Kyle, when everybody says deep draft, we assume, okay, that's very deep in the first round, maybe into the second. Is this comparable in your eyes to 2003? Is it deeper than that? And when we're talking deep, are we talking two rounds, three rounds? What are we talking?
Well, I can tell you this. I see players that we have ranked in the early to mid-40s at Redline this year who would have been in the early to mid-20s in last year's draft. Granted, last year was not a deep draft, but it is a very deep draft. It's probably the deepest draft of the past 10 years, and maybe going back to 12 years ago, 2003. And yes, I would say that you're going to see really high quality players coming out of the deep into the second round. I even look at we have a block of players in the late 60s to early 70s who, for a variety of reasons, maybe some injury related and other factors, but there's a group of guys there in the 60s who, you know, in a lot of years, they could have been in the mid-40s on our list. So I definitely think in through the second round, you know, teams that have acquired a few extra second-round picks, I think there's some teams out there that have like 3, 4 second-round picks, and those teams are going to be setting up real nicely in this year's draft because they're going to get some real quality folks in the second round.
Kyle, who are your top three goaltenders? And where would you take a goaltender the earliest this year in the first round?
Well, the two top goaltenders are both Europeans, one who's already playing in North America, and that's Matej Tomek, who's a Slovak playing in Topeka in the NAHL. And then you have Ilya Samsonov, the big goaltender who plays for Magnitogorsk in Russia. Those two, to me, are clearly first-round talents. Whether they'll be selected in the first round, that's another matter. But in terms of actual value, I have them ranked on our chart as first-round values, and they are in our first round at Redline Report. Just outside the first round, the top North American goaltender that we have on our board is Mackenzie Blackwood, who played at Barrie the last couple of years. Again, a very big goaltender, modern prototype-type goaltender at 6'4", 215 pounds with good athleticism.
Historically, goaltenders have been the hardest ones to get a proper analysis on, you know, where they were drafted and ranked, and then later on in their career. Is it getting any easier?
I wouldn't say it's getting any easier. I just think that it's become a different animal in the NHL at the management level. As a general manager, you used to be able to count on having a 7, 8, 10-year leash. And if you drafted a goaltender in the first round, you could take your time and patience with him, bring him along slowly, and then, you know, by the time he was 23, 24, he'd be your number one guy. But that's 5 and 6 years down the road from when you drafted him. Now, if you're a manager, you know, if you're not winning right away, your shelf life is almost as short as a coach these days. So it's a tough call for a guy who doesn't have that stability like a Kenny Holland in Detroit or a Doug Wilson in San Jose. I mean, these guys have been around for a long time, until Lou Lamoriello stepped back recently. You know, he had that sort of tenure where he had the currency built up. He could do whatever he wanted, and it wouldn't be questioned. You could take a goaltender and, you know, maybe take 5 or 6 years to bring him along. But, you know, unless you're in that type of situation, it's tough for a manager to take a goaltender knowing that he's not going to be in your lineup for at least 3 or 4 years.
Kyle, always appreciate the rundown. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome, Jason. Talk to you again soon.
You betcha. Kyle Woodley from the Redline Report.